Good day, good people. I hope you are having a fabulous day, evening, midday, whenever you download this particular episode of the Cool Soror Podcast. I hope you've received the good news. We have now reached over 250,000 unique downloads, and it's because of you. You've been spreading the word, and it has been working, and I'm so very, very happy for your love and your support. And with that, we've got some amazing reviews that I would like to read to you really quickly before we get into our episode. And these reviews are just great. Here is a review from Diva T. She says, "My new favorite podcast. I am someone who discovered Rashan Ali from Sister Circle. Thank you so much for watching. I randomly heard her say she had a podcast, and I've been addicted ever since. I am currently looking into being a part of a grad chapter, and this podcast has been the deciding factor on me confirming that this is the right idea for me. Great content, sorors and bruhs, and an excellent host. This is such an innovative idea and podcast idea." Thank you so much, Diva T. Also, we have one from Shanice Cleckley. She said, "I was a skeptical listener last week when I browsed the listings looking for podcasts to break up the monotony of a six-hour road trip. I settled on the Cool Soror Podcast. Being a soror of Zeta Phi Beta, I was hopeful about the content. From the first podcast, I was blown away by the nuggets of inspiration and motivation I received. In 1 week period, I have binged. Rashan Ali is an awesome interviewer who recognizes the uniqueness and gifts of each guest. The Cool Soror Podcast has gained my trust and loyalty. I can't wait for the next interview." Whoa, this is so good. Thank you so much. That just means the world to me. So please continue to spread the word. And thank you so much for leaving such amazing reviews. Very just in depth. And that means so much to us. And we thank you, thank you, thank you. Today we are joined by a cool soror of Delta Sigma Theta. Her name is Shaquita Lockley. So very happy to have her on the podcast. She is doing some amazing work, but she has a new documentary that has been submitted to Sundance and the Tribeca Film Festival, and it's called Eggs Over Easy, talking about Black women and infertility. And she really takes an introspective look on the things that Black women go through and that we have not heard loudly in our community. So she is shedding the light on that. Not only does she do that, but she is a producer for live events, and she's definitely a cool soror. So here is Eggs Over Easy with Shaquita Lockley. I hope you have a fabulous day, and as I always say, enjoy. You know you gotta be a cool soror to talk to the cool soror herself.
I'm a cool soror.
Hey y'all,
I am a cool soror of.
What's up y'all, I'm a cool soror of.
Hi, I am a cool soror of.
Podcast hosted by me, Rashan Ali. Welcome to another edition of the Cool Soror Podcast. Really very, very happy to be joined by this beautiful lady across from me who she does it all. I'm just going to say she's a visionary, but it seems like I talk to visionaries all the time. And I'm really happy to have Shaquita Lockley on the show, producer and director of documentaries. She done plays. She does live production. She does everything. She's an author as well. And Shaquita, you are a cool soror of
Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm just happy to be here.
Oh, well, I'm really, really happy to have you on, and got your information from one of my good friends, Arlie Michelle. She was just really telling everybody about what you were doing, and I was like, but do you want to be on the show? Like, that would be great to talk about.
Well, it's time. Half my friends have been on here. Robin May has been on here.
Oh, yeah.
She's my therapist. Well, nice. She doesn't want to be called my therapist. She's my friend first. Right. I'm always on her couch.
Right, right.
So I'm just happy to be here. Yay. Well, thank you. I'm glad Arlie told you about me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk about your documentary.
Okay.
Eggs Over Easy, Black Women and Fertility. This is a huge, huge issue. Why? Yeah. is this so important for you to tell this story?
Well, for starters, I didn't know it was an issue because it's just not something that I talk about. It's not something my friends talked about. So when, like maybe 2 weeks before I turned 40, I was having my physical. My gynecologist looks at my chart and says, oh, you have a birthday coming up. Your eggs are turning 40. Huh. So I kind of blacked out. She's like, well, do you want to do anything with it? It's not too late if you want to have kids. That had not been on my radar.
At all.
London was on my radar. Italy was on my radar. Africa was on, like, my vacations
right.
were way up on my radar. My career was way on my radar. But this had not been on my radar because I have not been dating single in Atlanta. Or if I date, it's just not been anything that I thought was going to lead to like a marriage and a kid. It's not been serious. So it's, and I never, for me, my womanhood is not tied up in my uterus. Like if I have kids, fine. And if not, that's fine too, because I'm still awesome. That's right. How, and my life is good and my friends are great and my family is lovely. Mm-hmm. So it just wasn't something that was on my radar. Once that happened, everywhere I went, the topic popped up.
Right.
So that was in October because my birthday's coming up. I'm accepting gifts. It's the day before Halloween.
Your personality is awesome.
Just for anybody who's wondering. So right after that happened, the next, maybe 2 months later, was Christmas. I have an aunt who never had kids. She and her husband travel when he was alive. She has a great life.
Yeah.
Christmas, she stops Christmas, literally, like, stops the middle of what our family is doing. Uh-huh. And she's like, Quita, have you thought about whether or not you're going to have kids? It's the only, if I had a do-over, that's the only thing I would do over in my life. This woman, she's my sore as well, but she is so on top of her game. I never even knew. Like, she has such a full life.
Right.
So for her to take this moment, and this is somebody who loves me. She's not going to be just saying, you know, something crazy because it's the thing to say.
Right.
So for her to pause with all the cousins there to say, you need to think about this because you just turned 40.
Maybe she saw herself in you.
Yeah. She's my, like, we're the same.
Okay.
My aunt and I, we have very similar personalities. We're, like, career focused. So she's like, Quita, you should probably pause because in 5 years, you don't get to have this regret. Wow. So that made me think. So now within a 60-day window, it's come up. That January, I'm at a birthday party. Another soror, she's from FAM. You know Denise?
Denise Hendrix?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was on the podcast.
All right.
Yes.
So she's in my documentary too.
Okay.
So I'm at a birthday party. Denise is talking about she's going to think about what she's going to do with her eggs and start testing. That was the first person who ever talked to me about anything about eggs. And now, I mean, I'm 40 by now.
Right.
I went to Spelman. That's a women's college.
Right.
So you would think we are having these conversations. We're not. And Denise was so comfortable talking to me about it. So then I started researching. I'm like, well, what kind of testing and what are they doing? They're counting your eggs. So I just had so many questions. So that kind of had, it was on my mind. Mm-hmm. 2 months later, I think it was March, one of my profites is having a birthday dinner. I'm sitting beside someone who has, she and her husband had used donor eggs and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. So they had just miscarried on donor eggs, international ones. Well, what is that? What is an international donor
egg?
Like, I don't even know what that is. And in the meantime, we had a mutual friend who had eggs. She had frozen her eggs and she didn't want to use them anymore, was deciding what to do with them. And I'm like, have you talked to such and such? Because she got what you need. Like, this conversation kind of wrecked me because we're all in a friendship circle.
Right.
So how did y'all not know that the other needed something that the other had? So I couldn't sleep that night. I cried. And I knew kind of that I needed to be doing this because God doesn't just.
That's like, just, yeah.
I get sign after sign after sign. And at some point, you have to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started praying about it. Like, what am I supposed to do with this? Because I work, like, I have a job.
Right.
But I don't make millions of dollars to go invest in this documentary. So what ended up happening, once I decided to do the documentary, all this crazy stuff started happening. Like, my BMW engine blew up. So then I'm like, well, do I buy an engine for my car?
Or do you keep moving?
Do I keep moving to get my mama's old car? So I kept moving. I have my mama's old car. So I would take every dollar I made that was not my mortgage and pay for stuff for this documentary. So that is how it happened. So then I figured, okay, you can't. I'm thousands in the hole. Like, so much money in the hole. By that time, it had been, I thought I was going to take 3 months to do it. But what happened, once I started doing the interviews, somebody will say, oh, call such and such.
Man.
She has PCOS. Oh, call such and such. She has endometriosis. Or this person used the surrogate. So now I'm like, black women are surrogates? Where are they?
Oh, right.
How do I find them?
Right.
I started finding them and interviewing them. The first agency open in the state of Georgia is owned by a black woman. It's a surrogacy agency, but most of her clients are black because we can't. Normally, we can't afford the services
yes.
of a surrogate. You're talking a quarter. It can be up to $250,000.
Man.
It can be more. One of the people who I interviewed, well, she didn't want to be on camera at the end of the day, but they were almost $500,000 in. But they did get a daughter out of it. So when you think about the cost, if you just have like a regular job that's six figures are between, let's say, like what if you're a social worker, you're $60,000 to $70,000. What are you supposed to do if your ovaries aren't working or if for some reason you have endometriosis or you can't carry? If this is something that you want to do, how do you even pay for it?
Yes.
Well, guess what? They have you can adopt donor eggs. Who knew? Where do you go to adopt a donor egg?
Yeah, this information is just not, it's not readily available for people.
It's not readily available and we don't talk about it.
Yes.
So that kind of sparked me to do this. Like by now I was just in the middle of it and I couldn't stop. And it was just so many interviews. So I sent a letter to my friends and family like, look, I'm going to need some money. This is the project I'm working on. And so some of them sent me some money. Thank God for them. And then I could go to like New York and DC, like pockets where I had multiple people that I could interview.
Yes.
So I did that. And when I tell you it was miracle after miracle, there's this organization called the American Society of Reproductive Medicine. This is who lobbies to get, to have like infertility categorized as a disease. If it's categorized as a disease, now your insurance company has to pay
for
more.
It. Yeah.
So the World Health Organization, who they have categorized it as that, New York as a state has jumped on board, but most states have not. Or they'll give you a little bit. They'll say, okay, if you have fibroids, we'll pay for a fibroid surgery, but we will not pay the test whether or not you can have kids. We certainly won't pay for IVF. So ASRM has been like on the forefront trying to push this forward. And I'd gotten an interview with their publicist. Well, a day before I was supposed to go to interview him in DC, he wasn't going to be there. So they were like, oh, tomorrow I'll try New York. And I was going to be in New York. Something happened. He couldn't be there. So they're like, the only other person you could interview is the president. And he is at USC because he's the overall of endocrinology and reproductive classes at USC in California. Well, guess who was going to California 3 days later?
You were.
That's exactly. So we got to interview the president, who is like a rock star. He's been doing this for 30 years. He has kids, IVF kids. He's, I don't know. I don't want to call them. Back then, they were called test tube babies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So back when we didn't even
this
have
was all new technology. Yeah, new
exactly.
technology back then.
Exactly.
I mean, you can't say you know. I don't know what you're saying.
Well, yeah, the technology now has moved forward,
right?
And we have terminology, better words to put
around
it.
There you go.
So back then, when it wasn't even like a career move, not really. Very few people were doing it. He was doing it. He's a pioneer. And so I had the opportunity to interview him. Miracle after miracle after. I cannot even tell you how this documentary has come together. So now we're at a point where, oh, and then one of your sorors, Shauna Bain, her husband is the supervising editor of The Voice. Now she popped up, you know how on Instagram, it'll in the Explore, it's like people you should follow.
Right.
So Shauna was somebody that it said I should follow. And her page is curated beautifully. It's like beaches and flowers and I loved her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, what? I don't know her, but we have all these mutual friends. So another one of my profiles is like, oh, her husband does this, blah, blah, blah. Fast forward 6 months and I'm stalking them like, I need an editor. Can you call me? They reached out. Her husband edited my rough cut to send to Sundance. So we just submitted to Sundance Film Festival and Tribeca. So all fingers are crossed.
What?
And now we're in a Kickstarter campaign just to pay for stuff. Like I'm using a clip from Being Mary Jane and I have to pay BET so they don't send me to jail.
Right.
So now we're doing Kickstarter to pay for just the post edit stuff.
Yes.
But everything else is just, it's done. And it came together month by month, a faith walk.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wouldn't know from this month to the next what I was doing or how I was going
to
pay for it.
How long was the process from beginning to end to what that day, God, you, the day you couldn't sleep and the day you picked up your the first camera?
It's been about a year and 3 or 4 months. So okay. I like committed and submitted September of last year. William Murphy's church, he sings praise, is what I do, but he pastors a church here too. And at the time, they were one of my clients. So every September, he does this month-long, like, come pray at 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning. So I went to every Wednesday morning, I would go and pray, and this is what I had on the altar. Like, God, if you want me to do this, you're going to have to show me something. And I thought I would get this vision in, like, these pharmaceutical companies, and Oprah were going to call me and be like, here's $1 trillion.
Right.
Do your thing. And that it just didn't happen that way. It was step by step by step. So I would do one step. Money would appear. I would pay for it. Or I would get additional projects. And I'm like, well, my bills are paid. So I'm going to just have more interviews today. So it has literally been just step by step.
Yeah. What was revealed to you, not only about you, but about other women throughout this process?
The weight of shame that we carry, because like coming into it, I didn't know very much. Once I started talking about it, especially things you would think, okay, for someone who wants to be child free by choice, like they know they don't want to have kids. That's one of my line sisters. Well, the shame attached with trying to tell your mama that you're not having kids because you don't want to. Mm. Or for some women, one of the women, she's a Sora from Morris Brown, but it's not that she didn't want to. Time caught up with her. She woke up 45.
Yeah.
So it's no kids. So there is so much shame attached to our choices. And then women who have had miscarriages where you're supposed to just get up and go to work and act like this didn't happen.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, you're young, you can have another child. The shame of thinking that as a woman, or as what society tells you you are as a woman, your body should be able to do X, Y, and Z, and it is not.
Yeah.
So for strong Black women who we have multiple degrees, everybody I interviewed has multiple degrees.
Wow.
I'm talking master's, doctor's, doctorate in something other than medicine, but also doctors, physicians, doctors. Yeah. So you would just think because we are sheroes and superwomen and
right.
we can save the world that you should be able to have a baby if you want to. And that's not the case. So because the shame is so heavy, we don't talk about it. From having a fibroid, you know how, so growing up until last year when I started this, if somebody is having surgery, they'll say, oh, it's feminine issues. Or, mm-hmm. oh, I have like just women issues. Well, what is it? Is it PCOS? Is it endometriosis? Is it like, what is going on? Are you having a hysterectomy? We do not use the language around it because there is so much shame attached to it.
Yeah.
And it's just because we don't talk about it, it was nowhere in the conversation of right. my life, period.
Right.
Even though I have fibroids, my mom and all her sisters have had fibroids. 80% of Black women will have fibroids by the age of 80% by the age of 50.
Man.
Well, when you're 40, 50 is close.
It's very close.
50 is close.
Because I just turned 40 like last week, but I'm already 42. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm 42 and I'm about to be 43. So
right.
the thought of within this 7-year window, pretty much everybody I know will have a fibroid. That is insane. So we also talked to a holistic doctor here, Dr. Amsu. He's based here. And he and his partner, they put together compounds. He's an endocrinologist, certified with the Aboriginal Medical Association, not the AMA.
Oh, okay.
Dr. CB's mm-hmm. organization. So they...
Oh, from Dr. Sebi from over... And Honduras?
Yeah, so that was like one of his teachers.
Okay.
And he's the way, if you watch Love and Hip Hop, I think he's been on there a few
okay.
times.
Okay.
He helped Waka Flocka lose all the weight and try to just go natural.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, a lot of women who were coming in for random issues, it ended up at the end of the day, they had fibroids or PCOS or endometriosis.
What is PCOS? Tell me about
it. Polycystic ovary syndrome.
Okay, gotcha.
Sorry
if I was ignorant, but just in case anyone else didn't know.
No. Yeah. Sorry. So it wreaks havoc on your body. And I just posted, actually, either last night or today, if anybody wants to find out specific details about it, they could go to my Instagram,
okay.
which is Eggs Over Easy Film.
Eggs
That's
over
the
easy
Instagram
film.
And the Facebook.
Okay.
Eggs Over Easy Film. That it was today. That was actually my post for today. Just talking about the details of it and what it does to your ovaries and how it throws your hormones off. So a lot of times if people have PCOS, they might be misdiagnosed early on. They think it's like thyroids or something because it throws your hormones off. You might gain a whole bunch of weight. You might lose weight. You might have a period. You might not have a period for years.
Right. And you don't even know what's going on with yourself.
And you don't know. So they do all these tests. And at the end of the day, it circles back right around to this is what it is. And so it's hard to get pregnant when you don't have a period for 12 months.
Right.
So that's what PCOS is. So okay. With Dr. Amsu, these women are coming in like, hey, I have weight gain. Can you put me on a vegan diet or can you put me on some kind of regimen to get my body together? And after they would do blood work and just talk to them, it's one of these three things, which is the top three reasons that Black women have infertility issues. So he would do the testing, and by education, he is an endocrinologist educated in London, but I think he's from Jamaica. So they would put the compounds together and say, if we can fix this, which is the PCOS or the endometriosis or the fibroids, and decrease the estrogen in your body, which is coming from all kind of things like sunflower seeds, which I didn't even know.
Yeah.
So we took him for his interview. We went out to Arlie's daddy's farm and just had him walk around and say, well, what can we eat? Because his point is you can be a vegan, but you could still be eating some wrong things that are like making estrogen go crazy in your body, like coffee, like sunflower seeds, stuff that you just don't think is bad.
Right.
We know soy is probably not good. Like my gynecologist took me off soy years ago when they first found a fibroid. So I knew that. We knew chicken has hormones. Some chicken has hormones. So, you know, stay away from that or be mindful of it. But a sunflower seed?
Yeah, you're like, oh,
that's like the hood treat of choice.
Right.
So you just don't think about that. So we went around Mr. Wilson's farm, and the stuff he picked out, like Swiss chard, you can have because that's the best lettuce ever. But other things on the farm, on a farm, like this is organic.
Yeah, this is like organic food, and you're telling me I can't even eat this
because it's increasing like estrogen in your body. So, so we interview him too. So we do have medical physicians that we interview that talk about how to have surgeries and what happens when you have surgeries. But to get to the actual root of it, there's not been any research because this is a Black woman's issue. And so there are no dollars. There's very few dollars on the table for research for us.
What is your goal for this documentary? Is it to get funding for certain things or just awareness? What's your outlook
for this? My intention?
Yeah.
So my intention with the documentary is at the basic, just to raise awareness and say, we need to be talking about this because when we talk about it, maybe now we can get some funding for it. Or maybe now you know where to go to the Cade Foundation to help you pay for your IVF. Or maybe now you'll know, check with your doctor because if you miss two periods and you're not pregnant, maybe something's wrong. Or if you've been having unprotected sex for 3 months and you're under the age of 35 and you're not pregnant, that's not like necessarily a blessing from the Lord. Something might be wrong. Like we might be happy about like, woo.
Ooh, we made it.
But something might be wrong. So when you're over 35 and these 3 to 6 months have gone by and you're not pregnant, even if you're not trying, you should just check with your doctor because something might be a little bit off. And if women knew that, we could take control of our health in a different way.
Right.
So the intention really at the simplest level is just to raise awareness so we know what questions to ask. And then so we stop shaming each other and stop asking people like, oh, when are you going to have a baby? You don't know what somebody is going through.
You
don't
never know
that somebody might have just had a miscarriage last week. Like that happened within a 60-day window with a friend of mine. Well, why are people like, when are you having a baby? They don't even know that there was just a loss.
I have one of my good sore friends who, you know, she gets that question a lot. And she says, well, my uterus is ready. That's her response when people tell
when people say that. And she shouldn't even have to answer it.
I know
all.
She should.
Because if you got to ask me this question, you don't know me well enough to know the answer to that question.
Right, exactly. You don't.
But in our society, it's just so natural. We don't think of it
as a bad thing.
Like, we don't know it's bad. Like, if I'm in a grocery store and you got a cute little baby and I, like, touch the baby's face, I probably shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. But if that's just, like, social norms, I might not know. Like, oh, don't touch somebody, baby. They don't know you. Are your hands clean?
Right.
So that's just things we don't know. So with fertility in a woman's womb, it's sensitive because you don't know what she's going through.
Yeah.
So don't ask.
Yeah. What? Look
it's
at
just
that.
Rude.
Did you? I need to go back to the original question. What your aunt told you to do. Did you do that? Did you freeze your eggs? What did you decide to do?
Doctors and the industry in general do not suggest freezing your eggs when you are over 35.
Okay.
I know people who have done it up to 38. One of my profiles I interviewed, she did it at 38. One of my friends who was just here a week ago, she's 38 and she's doing it. I got to watch her take her shots and everything. Mm-hmm. It was kind of mind blowing.
Yeah,
I was thinking the needles are like huge because I'm being Mary Jane. They are,
but TV.
But it wasn't really. It was like a flu shot needle.
Okay,
so it was long, but it was thin.
Okay.
So that was fine. So I haven't done anything. I actually have made no decisions with my eggs. I'm just open to, like, before I wasn't even considering anything other than adoption. And then I was scared of that because I'm single. Like, being a single parent was not on the top of my to-do list. But then after talking to Denise and seeing how she manages with adoption, one of my Dean of Pledges actually is AMA. And we cover AMA as well. AMA is... It means older ladies, but I can't remember.
Okay.
Advanced maternal age.
Okay,
so
advanced maternal age.
Technically, if you're over 35, but especially if you're 40 and over, you're in this category where if you get pregnant, you have to go to the doctor like every other week.
Right.
And they monitor every single thing. Blood pressure, baby movement, all of that. So I was very scared of just the whole topic, and so I just didn't think about it. So now I have more peace about it. Mm-hmm. Like, if it happens, then fine, it happens. A baby might happen naturally. Adoption is definitely on the table, and beautiful. I'm not so nervous about that anymore.
Yeah. She mentioned Denise Hendricks. If you have not heard her episode here on the Cool Sore Podcast, make sure you go back and listen to Denise Hendricks. It's a compelling story.
She's the awesomest.
Yeah. It's a compelling story about her walk into adoption and adopting baby Luke. Beautiful
baby.
He's the best.
So when we did her interview, Luke was like, y'all not gonna pretend like I'm not here.
He came out. He was all in it. Right?
He was. So he's in it. So we ended up just using B-roll so people know that Luke is here.
Right.
Even though we're focused on Denise, this is Luke.
Wow.
He wants y'all to know.
Exactly.
He's the cutest baby.
That's beautiful. You talked about how you pay your mortgage and you do live event production. What does that entail for your cousin, Tasha Cobb?
Yes.
She's an award-winning gospel artist and with an amazing voice. Now, can you sing? Did the gene hit you?
Yeah, I can sing. My whole family sings. I mean, Tasha is a Grammy-winning artist.
Right.
So don't expect that.
Right.
I can hold a note.
I know you can. So what does live production entail for you?
So while I was at Spelman, which is where I went for undergrad, I interned in the office of, it's alumni affairs, but events came under that.
Okay.
So I was doing events. I went to Emory for film school. I have a master's in
studies. Yeah.
So I was the first African-American.
Beautiful.
At the school, in this program. Uh-huh. So anyway, I had learned all this film stuff. And then fast forward a couple of years. So in between there, I stayed in nonprofit. I didn't go into film. I worked for Evander Holyfield's Foundation.
Okay.
Still doing events, still raising money, still in nonprofit work. I was at a church and the technology was just
horrible.
Not up to par.
Right.
For a church of that size, it should have been better. And I was so bothered. Like, I could go to an Usher concert. Not that you need entertainment at a church, but
it brings another element. Yeah.
Put me to sleep at the church. So, or if you're doing something, at least do it in excellence. Like, if you're going to have lyrics on the screen, can you not have typos in the lyrics on the screen? That kind of stuff throws me off. It distracts me.
Right, because it's the small things, the details.
So that's what I started doing. And then I was at Buckhead Church for a few years. And I volunteered with their teens. And the way that they did their teen service with the lights and the bells and the whistles, I loved all of that. So then I had an opportunity to work at Impact Church. And
yeah.
I was the creative programming director for almost 5 years there. From Brown, and then we were at World Congress Center for a while.
Yeah.
And now they're in the new space. Yes. I wasn't in the new space. Well, I did the setup for the
new space.
I wasn't in the new space.
When I go to church, that's where I go.
Oh, shout out to Impact.
Yes, what up, Olu?
So just to be able to take technology, infuse it with faith in a way that makes sense, that was important to me. And I found out that was my sweet spot. At the same time that this was happening, I have been doing, William Murphy's second, third, fourth, however many albums he had done by then, Bishop Paul Moore, and I had been working with album launches, because if you know how to plan an event or produce an event and you know the TV part, that's how you're getting your videos. Yep. That's how you're getting your promo clips. That's everything your record label is going to use to market you. Mm-hmm. So it was a niche that I fell into because nobody knew how to do both. At the same time, my little Spellman sister, she and her husband at the time were launching a show called Gospel Dream. Mm-hmm. Gospel Dream was BET. It was a predecessor to Sunday's Best.
Gotcha.
And then it ended up on Gospel Music Channel, which is now, I think, like Aspire Up or one of those.
One of those. I think it's Up. Yep, it's Up. Yep.
So I just fell into faith-based television and live production. It's live production, but if they want it to be on TV, then I know what the cameras should be doing, how to change the lights from just the live production to something that a television requires, which is usually more light, and how to light it. So I fell into that. And then fast forward maybe 3 years, I was already working in that field. My cousin moves up. She lives with me, Tasha Cobb. She lived with me for, I guess, 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to sing. So she got plugged in with William Murphy and started singing. And then the next thing you know, she has an album.
Right.
And now she has tours and she needs video content. Yeah. And so that's what I do. Now I get to have a paycheck.
Oh my goodness. So you travel with her on tour and all
this? It depends.
Okay.
So like right now they're on tour. I did the first two tour dates and then I pick up at the end of the month, which I think we're in Brunswick at the end of the month. St. Simon's, Jekyll Island.
Okay.
So we're there at the end of the month. But if I don't go, I package everything and send it. So a lot of times I don't love a tour bus. Grown and older. So a lot of times I'll package it all, like put it in a Dropbox and send it. So all of the visuals, all of that happens. Then like this week she was on the Doves and she hosted the Doves, but she also performed. So I got to say, okay, well, everything should be in white. And then when they get to the choir, it goes to this and just kind of send what the visuals need to look
That's
like.
And dope.
We've done it for the BET Gospel Celebration.
Yes.
So it's been pretty cool. You don't expect your kid cousins to like grow up. You're and right. Be awesome.
Tell us. Yeah. I was so happy when she was on our show and she, sat down with Selena. It was just beautiful, man. Such a beautiful show. I loved when they say she was coming to the show. I was like, I want to be where you are. I think I can sing in my other life. So I love Tasha Cobb. So you're just a being of talent. You're a playwright as well. Candy Burst and Todd, they're Mother's Love. And that got a lot of love.
And that was, I don't want to say a fluke. That was just like another miracle. The guy who was doing their casting, Dayron, he was one of the volunteers on my team at Impact. So he's like, he called, they need a writer. Okay, well, for what? So I went in and I had been kind of following the show. And within 2 weeks, we had a script and ended up with a musical that was, I think it was season 8 of The Housewives. Yeah, that was her storyline.
It sure was.
But I didn't know when we were writing it that this actually was happening. Uh-huh. So when she would say, okay, these are the ideas, this is what I want in it. And she did all the music. I did the script part. But she'll say, okay, this is the story arc. Well, I didn't know, like, Mama Joyce really was doing this? Or, you know, this was actually happening in her real life. So that was a lot of fun. And I think 4 out of the 5 shows sold out.
Yeah, good for you.
That was my little playwright credit. My 5 seconds on the Housewives fame.
It's all good. You got your own fame. You're making waves. You're also an author. Thank you for giving me this book. I'm going to definitely give it to my best friend to share with her. Her niece, Mommy Where's Heaven, a conversation starter. What made you write this particular book?
With Maggie Tales. So when you're at Spelman, your junior year, you get a freshman sister to mentor. My freshman sister, when we were like 10 years out of college, her 18-month daughter died.
Oh, God.
Just died. Just she had a cold and she just died. And that was hard for the adults, but for like the little cousins who would always be
play
around,
because
our friend group is close, so you know the kids. Right. We're at each other's houses. So to try to explain to this 3-year-old where her cousin is and why is her cousin sleeping with Jesus, that was just a lot, because adults are trying to deal with their own feelings. Uh-huh, so to try to find words small enough to explain to a 3, 4, 5, up to 7-year-old kid, that was just almost impossible.
Right,
so
right.
I did a book, Lauren Lacey. That's who does graphics at Impact. She did the illustrations for me.
Wow.
And that's the book, and it's probably 7 or 8 years old now.
It's beautiful. But, Maggie Tales, Mommy mm-hmm. Was Heaven. Okay. Yep. Beautiful, beautiful. And not only that, you have Creative Worship, 86 Tips for Establishing a Dynamic Worship Media and Production Team. You authored this book as well. And I'm sure a lot of churches across this country are like, let me get this book. Let me make sure my service is on point.
Amen.
Yes.
So what was happening, I would get a lot of churches who would want me to come in, but they were smaller churches and they didn't have a budget. Like, they were breaking their budget just trying to pay for a flight. So if you are breaking your budget trying to pay for a flight, you probably should invest in something other than this, that type of way to get me there.
Right.
So I was thinking, okay, if they're spending X amount of dollars to get me there, and I know they need X amount of dollars for lights, they need X amount of dollars for ProPresenter, or like a program to actually show graphics and lyrics on, it's not a waste to bring me in, but they could be doing something else with their money.
Well,
I just put it in a book. If you can bring me in, great. I would love to come. But if your budget is small and you really, like, you could bring me in, but then you can't buy anything that you need to buy to actually function on Sundays. Yeah,
your plane ticket could be a program they need.
That is what it is.
Yeah.
So I put it all in a book because you can't take it with you when you die.
Yeah.
So you might as well leave it and just help people and help somebody else. And then I've trained people. So, you know, if they're in certain markets, like if you're in New Orleans or if you're in Florida, or, like, I have people that I've worked with who are closer. So maybe you could just put them in a car to come and take the book and y'all go through some pages of the book. But I try to walk them through everything from what to do with their music ministry to what to do with their audio visual stuff to how to treat their volunteers so people aren't quitting you all the time.
Right.
So that's the book.
Why 86 tips?
I get that question a lot. So I wrote the tips, and when I finished, there were 86 of them.
Nothing special.
I'm like, now what scripture was that? It was
nothing.
I have nothing.
Not
for
Psalms 8 and 6. Nothing.
Nope. It was none of that. It was 86 things that y'all need to know to keep your teams on track. So
who are you? I mean, are you doing this for anybody now? Do you have a new church, or are you just?
No. Okay. So I still do some work with William Murphy, and I still, of course, I'm on the road with Tasha, on and off the road with Tasha. I have mostly been focusing on finishing the documentary, but I still have clients where I'll pop in, especially if they're in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
I'll pop in and just do like a one day or a half a day workshop with them.
Good. So you were saying that you do have a Kickstarter campaign.
Yes.
for your documentary. Has it been shown, or are you still waiting on some of that funding to complete, I guess, some of the scoring and all that kind of stuff?
So you can't show it until after festival season, right?
Got you.
So we've submitted to 2 festivals. We're waiting to see, with fingers crossed, which one or both that we're accepted into. So in the meantime, I have a 9-minute trailer.
Okay.
And a 1-minute trailer, I think, is on my Instagram.
Okay.
So that people can kind of get an idea of what it looks like and what topics we're talking about. And they could just go to Kickstarter and type in Eggs Over Easy.
Nice and easy.
Easy to remember.
Yes.
Eggs Over Easy Film, and it'll pop up if they want to support. And I think the link, you can go to YouTube and type in Eggs Over Easy and my name, and it pops up.
Beautiful, beautiful. In 1995, you became a member of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. Did Delta Sigma Theta choose you, or did you choose Delta Sigma Theta?
Well, I feel like I was born into the organization.
Oh, okay.
So it's funny. So my grandfather, he passed a couple years ago, almost 95. And his brother, who lives in Florida, it was only 2 of them. He's Uncle Noah. He's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's 95 or 96.
Okay.
Vibrant, just, he's fine.
Still going.
He's still living his life.
Right.
So all of Uncle Noah's kids went to FAMU or Florida State.
Okay.
And they are all Omegas and AKAs.
Okay.
All of my granddaddy's kids went to Savannah State, and they're all Deltas. So that's the joke. Like, family reunion is funny.
It's like a Greek picnic.
It is. Christmas is funny. One of my cousins, Penny, she lives here. So Penny's an AKA married to a Kappa from Morehouse. So it's just funny. We have a good time with it.
Right, right.
But on my side of the family, we are all red and white. That's all we do. So I was born into the organization.
Okay.
And then, of course, going to Spelman, it was just the perfect match for me, because at the time they were just running everything. Mm-hmm. Now I will say, because Spelman, you know, we're all women's college, and many say we are a sorority within ourselves.
Yes, y'all are.
So it's really And I know everybody is doing awesome stuff. So we didn't have catty battles and catty fights and stuff. We didn't have it. It just was like, well, what is your preference?
Right.
This is what these people are doing, and this is how they're running the yard. And this is what these people are doing, and this is how they're running the yard.
Right.
When I was there, well, my freshman year, like Ms. Maroon and White, she was Mu Pi, which is our AKA chapter. Mm-hmm. But Ms. Spellman, she was Eta Kappa.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, Ivy Simmons is the best.
I love Ivy Simmons.
Ivy made me. So I'm like, and I just saw her a week ago. She was in town a week ago.
I love Ivy. We were supposed to get together. She
last
called.
Last week?
Yes, like when she was, two, yeah.
We had lunch.
Lord.
With
okay.
Amika, yes. Jason's wife.
Yes.
So,
who's been on the podcast as well, Jason.
Yes. That's my people.
Yes.
So that's just what was the perfect fit for me.
For you, right.
So,
yeah.
I'm a fan.
And you're number
one. You know it's homecoming, by the way.
Oh, honey, I'll be front and center at Spell House.
I'm hydrating as we speak.
I'm glad you are. I've got my waters in the car because when you've gone to an HBCU.
Nothing like it.
It's everybody's homecoming is kind of like yours. And
yes.
Then I'm in Atlanta. We go to Spell House every year. It's a group of my sorors. And it's like we got a couple from Howard. We got a couple from Tennessee State. And
yes.
We literally have our shirts on.
Y'all
and walk up and down and tailgate. So I love going to Spell House.
I only missed one.
Really?
Because I had choir rehearsal that day. And it overlapped. We were doing an event. A big event.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only one in 20-something years.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. And you were number one on your line.
I am the ace on my
line. Yes. How many were on your line?
34.
Good. 34. Come on,
we just had our 20th. Year before last.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Me too. I just celebrated my 20th.
But my phone has been battery dying. Everybody texting. That's why my phone battery's dying. Because they're blowing up my phone. Everybody's en route. So they'll either get here today or
Thursday is when the turn up starts. I'm going to be front.
Yeah,
I'm tell
so
you.
I'm so excited. And we have one line brother. Well, he's not really a line brother.
Right.
But my line sister, Rocky, her husband, he's a Kappa and swears that he is like the 35.
Oh my.
Out of 34. So he started with text this morning like, don't forget I'm on my way. What time are we taking a picture on the yard? Like,
what?
Goodbye, Bruce.
Did he go to Morehouse?
No, I think he went to like Howard or Hampton. He came after college.
Oh my gosh. He need
so
to chill out.
He is our line brother. And that is why my phone was dying early today.
Oh my
I'm
God.
Like, take a seat. All the seats.
Right, right. It's going to be a really good time.
Yes.
Well, you have been such a joy.
Well, thank you so much for
on the show.
Me.
Really, really have. And I wish you nothing but complete success with this
thank
documentary
you.
And everything. Your spirit is so good.
Thank you.
Yes, God. I love it. I love it. How can people, I know you mentioned it before. Again, please tell everybody how they can see the trailer, how they can follow you and all that you are doing.
Okay, so for the film, everything is Eggs Over Easy Film. So you can go to eggsovereasyfilm.com.
Mm-hmm.
On Instagram, it's Eggs Over Easy Film. On Facebook, it's Eggs Over Easy Film. But if you are looking for me, I am mostly on Instagram, and that's at Quita Writes. QUITAWRITES.
Quita
also Wright. Easy to remember.
Love it. Love
yes.
it. Love it. Well, thank you so much.
Thank Shaquita you.
Shaquita. Hold on now. You can shriek. Oh, Quita Writes.
Yes.
Gotcha.
That's why I have to spell Writes, like write with an ink pen so they don't think it's my last name.
Gotcha. Because I'm like, hold on. Did I say her name wrong when I introduced her? Dang. Okay. Shaquita Lockley, everybody.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being
thank
here.
You.
Really appreciate
thank
your
you.
Time.
I am Shaquita Lockley. I'm a writer and producer, and I'm a cool soror of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated.
Ooh.